This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Geek Squawk. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Jeff Sandu is not here.
He's not. And more fool him, because we get to talk about drones.
We do.
Yes, which is a terribly exciting subject.
Go on.
No, the world's, well, it says world's first drone delivery, but you were saying just before this show
it's a lie.
Yes. That drone deliveries have been happening in China, I
since around about July of 2018. JD.com, Amazon's primary rival over in China.
Ah, okay. Yeah, exactly. Well, in the rest of the world, there's a world's first for... Google or Alphabet has won approval in Australia, specifically in Canberra, to start trialing deliveries of small items, food and drinks, some medications, and it says locally made coffee and chocolate. I'm not really sure who that's supposed to
highlight.
Well, help.
Uh-huh.
But no, I mean, we've been told for years and years that we're going to have drone deliveries. One of the things that has put a stop to it so far, well, obviously logistics,
yeah.
Having that number of drones in the air and having some system to actually coordinate them so that they don't crash into each other,
yeah.
Or into people.
People, yeah.
How long they can stay in the air, the battery life is obviously an issue as well. And of course, the load capacity, because...
Yeah.
The battery is very heavy already, so the capacity of the drones, unless they're very large, then becomes very limited. But Amazon and Alphabet and all these other retail companies have been pushing this for a very, very long time. It does seem to be that robot delivery, whether it's in the air or on the ground, is going to be at least one path of the future. And this is the first time it's been licensed by an aviation authority to be rolled out to the general public beyond these kind of very small, I guess, pilot schemes for this kind of stuff.
You could have used a different phrase there.
Well,
you,
I could, but it was still, it's still accurate. But the issue I think is, do we actually want to see this happening in any kind of numbers? I mean, we've seen, for example, over the last couple of years, the electric scooters, the rental services,
yep.
popping up in a lot of cities,
yep.
and being removed from those cities,
yep.
just as quickly, because there are too many scooters, they're lying all over the place, they're getting damaged, they're not keeping to local regulations and zoning regulations. You know, a lot of issues with these products on the streets. If we're looking at increasing traffic along our streets and above them by this degree, I mean, when you think about the number of Amazon packages that go out every day or the number of parcels from Lazada, if you started putting those into the sky rather than into a van and driving up to your door, our skies are going to get very, very busy very, very quickly.
Just Jeff Sandu's deliveries alone would be like a swarm of bees arriving at the office every few days.
Well, exactly. And that's the other thing as well. I mean, what happens with that last mile delivery
yeah.
as well? Because if you're in an office, what, does the drone fly into
ring
reception, ring the bell?
Yeah.
You know, there are these kind of practicalities as well. We've seen services for floor-based drones, little robot carriers, and they've had issues with crashing into pedestrians because, of course, they're
yeah.
generally quite low.
And vandalism.
Yeah, and well, I mean, we've had the vandalism, but also we've had these kind of accidents as well because they're negotiating sidewalks.
Mm.
They're very heavy, they're very dense, and of course, they're below most people's eye level.
Yeah.
So there have been these kind of collisions and minor accidents. As you said, we've had the vandalism aspect. I think there was one case of a robot security guard or a drone security guard in Los Angeles last year, and he was simply tipped over
yeah.
by vandals. And of
yeah.
course, if your security guard can be tipped over by the people it's supposed to be policing, then that doesn't suggest it's doing a terribly good job.
We live in Malaysia. I've seen some security guards that can be tipped over, believe me.
Well, you know. Yeah, of course. But I mean, that's a different issue. But you know, are we ready for this kind of full-scale rollout of these drones? Or is this even a kind of solution, the wrong solution to the problem of delivery? Should we be looking at ways to minimize the kind of collection of things to that last mile so that things are delivered in bulk to kind of depots within the sites? And of course, that makes that last mile delivery a little bit easier rather than just sending out all these machines swarming through the sky and potentially blocking out the sun. I don't know.
So, I mean, the options that we've got and that have kind of been thrown onto the table, not just with drones, we're talking about automated vehicles, automated cars. And it's like we have two distinct camps. Almost. You have the developers of the automated vehicle, road-based, land-based, and then we have the kind of drone operators and the people who want to be flying drones around. At some point, we have to decide, I think, there's going to be that decision, we go one way or we go the other way.
Well,
would you agree with that?
Maybe? Well, I think what we're seeing here is actually more of a convergence, because what we're seeing is retailers like Amazon or JD who are actually funding that research into the drones themselves.
Yeah.
So what we're seeing is them actually removing that logistics part from their distribution. It will all be handled internally by machines. So when you're looking at the development of these kind of robot vehicles, UAVs or whatever, those tend to be by other commercial companies.
Mm.
And what companies like Amazon are doing is basically trying to freeze out those third-party companies and say, no, we don't need your technology.
But what they're also doing is if, for example, now I ordered something from Amazon or whatever, and I'm here in the office, as we mentioned earlier on, a drone can't fly in, ring the doorbell. So there's an employee of some company who, you know, has to deliver that item to me. I have to go collect it from him, sign for it, one thing or another. If I'm collecting something from a drone, I have to go out and stand in the middle of nowhere or in the middle of a field to collect my package.
Absolutely. I mean,
so
these,
what is Amazon and JD and whoever thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, these are the kind of practicalities that we're getting down to. I mean, I think that Amazon was trialing a scheme in Cambridge in the UK, and that was just for simple items like popcorn, which obviously are very light.
Yeah.
But in order to sign up for that service, you had to have a large garden.
Right.
So that was part of the requirement to be part of this scheme. You had to have a large open area for the drone to come down so that you can collect this package. That's something that we still haven't solved. Whether it be that in the future, you know, on the roof of every building, there is a drone reception area and the parcels just get brought down by some kind of assistant in the building. Whether these things come down to the car parks of where we live, that's still to be determined. And of course, the size of the drones and the power to weight ratio is also changing. So the drones are getting smaller. So potentially in the future, some of these things could actually come into these human spaces. You could potentially even see drones inside lifts coming up to.
No.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but even here at the BFM building, there's an enormous atrium outside here.
Yeah.
So potentially a drone could fly in here, go up the atrium, and simply fly up the inside of the building to BFM's front door and hover there until somebody comes and gets Jeff's package.
Wearing blades inside an elevator is something that terrifies me, you know?
Well, of course. I mean, these are all the issues that have to be ironed out. But yeah, whether we want it or not, drone deliveries are here.
They are. Right. We're going to take a short break, folks. When we come back, of course, King of Culture, then something to do with Facebook and AI doing some very silly things, as usual. You are, of course, listening to Geek Squawk here on BFM 89.9.
Better Finance Management. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9 at the Business Station. My name is Rich Bradbury in the studio with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. It's Geek Squawk Part 2. What have we got?
Well, we have King of Culture. And as people may remember from the past, we used to have a feature within this called Down in the Dumps for things that I was particularly unhappy about. And this week I'm down in the dumps.
What are you down in the dumps about, Matt?
I bought a new phone earlier this week.
Okay.
That's
normally a positive thing, right?
Exactly. I bought the new Apple XR, which I've been putting off for ages because all the new iPhones are ridiculously expensive. So I got it home and it turns out I can't use it.
Why?
Well, I have a problem. A very small percentage of people has a sensitivity to OLED, AMLO, AMOLED phones, all of those things. So these very high resolution screens,
right,
because they have a particular refresh rate,
yeah,
and it causes headaches, eye strain, a lot of issues. It's not supposed to happen with LCD screens. So that's the reason I bought the iPhone XR, which has an LCD screen.
Mm-hmm.
I'd already tried out the XS, the Max, all the standard X. Can't use it. Samsung screens, very high resolution. They don't work for me.
They don't jive with you.
No, they don't jive with me at all. So I thought, okay, I'll go for the this.
You'll slum it a little
XR, bit.
I'll slum it a little bit. Yeah.
Can't use it either. Don't know what it is, whether it's to do with pixel density or any of that stuff that I understand absolutely nothing about, but I can't look at the screen for more than sort of 2 or 3 minutes without not getting a headache.
Can I ask you a question?
No, but without getting nauseous. I can't look at the screen without feeling that I've got motion sickness. And I actually contacted a friend who works at Apple in the UK, asked him if there are any workarounds, because I'd done all of the things that I'd found online, like reducing white point, changing brightness, reducing motion, all of these things. None of it was actually working. But it does bring you to think, well, is there a point that people with sensitivities to technology will no longer be able to move up to a technology. Now, I already have a fairly rubbish TV because I can't use an OLED or an AMOLED TV. Most of the TVs out there, the flat screen TVs out there, use this kind of technology. I can't look at that kind of screen. It literally hurts my eyes. So what will people with these kind of sensitivities do in the future as these technologies advance and progress? Not just will we get left behind, will there be a phone that I can use in 5 years' time?
Simple question, and one that you would have asked, I'm sure. Did you test it before you bought it?
Yeah, I did, but I tested it in obviously in the Apple store, which has very strong, bright lighting.
Gotcha.
But even that, I mean, my eyes are very sensitive to fluorescent lighting. So every time I'm in a shop and I'm in a mall, I'm having those effects anyway, so I can't tell whether it's coming from the phone specifically or from the ambient lighting of the store. So I expect there to be some amount. So I thought I'd tested the phone over a series of a few weeks and I'd compared it to the OLED panel screens and it was easier to look at. So I thought, okay, it'll be fine. Got it home. No. First day, motion sickness. So, of course, next day, day after, phone I simply can't use.
So how do you go back to Apple with that then?
Well, I mean, you can't. Certainly in Malaysia, you can't. So fortunately, my wife also needed to upgrade her phone. So she has very kindly taken that phone on. And I'll have to go and get an earlier iteration because my phone is just about dead.
Oh, dear.
So I'll have to go and buy a new old model so that I can carry on using the Apple product. But it's just the same with Android as well. It's getting increasingly difficult to find phones that don't have these very high definition screens. Now, for people like me, there is some kind of hope in the offing. The next generation of these organic displays is going to use a different kind of technology, which means they won't use these kind of flashing lights in the background to power the lights. So I won't have any of that flicker problem that is common on a lot of screens right now. But it's not just for people like me. It's people with
Epilepsy.
People with epilepsy, but not just related to the screens as well. So some people as well have pressure issues with the active noise cancelling that's used in phones. So they don't realize they put the phone to their ear and they start getting popping sensations in their ear. They don't realize they have to go into the settings to turn off that active noise cancelling. And it just creates this kind of tinny ring in their ear using the phone. So not everyone is designed for the technology that we have.
Mm. Interesting. That's left you're like up the Swanee without a paddle, as my dad would say.
Well, absolutely. So, you know, is there going to be a subset of people who get left behind as technology progresses simply because they're not physically able to use that technology?
All right. Shall we talk about Facebook just for a little bit? I mean, we haven't spoken about them since what, last week?
Yeah, not since last week. We didn't mention them in the drone story. We could have done. I could have thrown Facebook in.
We could have done that. Facebook under, you know, one or the other.
So this is, I mean, I don't, this is just a really weird story. So Facebook have put out a press release saying that they're using their artificial intelligence to stop promoting the pages of dead users. So what had been happening, it would seem, previously was that if you marked the owner of a page as having died, when you're putting out invitations, you know, if you've got an event or a family thing, it might recommend that you send an invitation to your dead uncle or your Aunt Mary or
And it has done
whoever.
Before for me.
And it has done as well. Yeah. So what Facebook is saying now is their AI will actively prevent that from happening. What I don't understand is why it requires an AI.
Because, if you've already told it that person's deceased.
Exactly. If it doesn't sound like you need an algorithm to do it, it sounds like the algorithm you had wasn't working properly and just needed fixing.
Yeah.
So why not just say we've fixed it so that that won't happen?
It's not
rather
even
than
an algorithm, really. It's a database, right?
Precisely.
At the back end
so
of it.
I don't understand why they say that they're using artificial intelligence to prevent this from happening, because it's something that shouldn't have happened in the first place and should be, as you said, as simple as ticking a button in a database and it doesn't get sent to you. It's just one of the... I don't understand why it's a story.
Right.
The addendum to the story is actually longer than the actual story.
I was just going to look at that, yeah.
And the addendum doesn't even make any sense. So
it's your typical Facebook response.
No, so the update kind of added that Sheryl Sandberg had changed her blog post. If an account hasn't yet been immemorialized, we use AI to help keep it from showing up. That makes sense.
Right.
So they've changed it
to
make a bit more sense so that the AI will anticipate that people have passed away, even if their loved ones haven't done it. Whereas before, they were saying they were using AI to not invite you to see your dead mum, who you've already told them is dead.
Okay. Let's talk about something real and something newsworthy.
This is actually a fantastic story. So this came as an alert onto my phone late last night. And this is one of those nice examples of a story that is the collective work of scientists around the world. We now have the very first pictures of a black hole that have ever been captured. Now, to a lot of people, they might say, well, we know where black holes are, therefore we have pictures of them. No, because black holes bend light, so up until now it's been impossible to take pictures of them. But the work of, I think, 8 radio telescopes around the world and several years of concentrated work have enabled them to actually identify the pattern of gases around the black hole. So we can now see the outer rim of the black hole, which... absolutely scared me by saying the outer rim extends for hundreds of thousands of light years. Yeah. I mean, we have this idea of a black hole being, you know, relatively small and compact. But if you're saying it could pull in material from hundreds of thousands of light years away, that is incredibly impressive.
What I found very impressive was that all of these artist renditions over the years of what a black hole should look like is exactly what this looks like as well.
Pretty much. But I mean, that's because they knew the physics of what it was supposed to be. But I think what has kind of really surprised people is kind of the halo effect around this, because you'd expect it to be even.
Yeah.
But because of the rotation around the black hole and the way it bends light, it actually seems to shine at one direction and be dimmed at the next. Obviously, it's not. It's actually all the same material.
Yeah.
But it's just the way that the light is being bent around it. I mean, radio is a very strange place to talk about a picture of a black hole. Close your eyes and you can imagine it. But this is an absolutely fantastic breakthrough. And it's just one of those things that that kind of warms your heart. And I think you were mentioning that
there's a Malaysian involved.
Yes.
One of the scientists behind the groundbreaking achievement is a Malaysian scientist, Kevin Khoi Jun Yi, who got involved in the project after joining the Academia Sinica Institute of Astronomy and Astrophysics at the end of 2016 as a postdoctoral fellow. I've even got a quote from him. I was invited to join the Greenland Telescope and EHT group because of my background and previous experience in radio astronomy. Of course, this project was too exciting for me to turn down. He's from Penang.
That's absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant, right?
Yeah, and but go and search it out. I mean, if you've ever wanted to see a black hole rather than see a movie version of a black hole, the photos are now there for everyone to look at.
Indeed. We should play a song.
We should. And what we're going to play for you today, as a tribute to Facebook here, we have a cover of the fantastic Stayin' Alive. And this is by an Australian act called Tropical Asterisk Storm. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.